WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, coming up on tomorrow's show, we just talked to the former governor of New York. We will have the present governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy, on Connecticut's new progressive streak with a balance of spending cuts and tax hikes in its fiscal crisis budget and the first in the nation law to require paid sick leave. Governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy. Tomorrow, also tomorrow, tennis great Billie Jean King. She's working on Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign. We'll talk about that and more. Friday, Sarah Vowell. So a lot to listen for every day here on The Brian Lehrer Show. We continue on the economy. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we have Peter Diamond, the Nobel Prize winner in economics, nominated by President Obama to join the Fed, but now defeated, or he had to withdraw his nomination because of Republican opposition to the fact that he's a labor economist. We'll get Peter Diamond's side of his own story coming up. But right now, Eddie Brown's version of his own story. Eddie Brown is founder and president of Brown Capital Management. You may know him from his many appearances on Wall Street Week on PBS. He was also in top positions with IBM and T. Rowe Price. Now, Eddie Brown has a memoir that details his rise from child of a 13-year-old single mother to the top of the financial world. It's called Beating the Odds, Eddie Brown's Investing and Life Strategies, written with Blair Walker. Eddie, so nice of you to join us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
The front flap of your book teases your story, saying basically you were born with everything a baby could want except being born black in the Jim Crow South to a 13-year-old girl. Who raised you?
That's correct. My mother. You know what I like to say about this story, and I've been told it's a compelling story, is that one cannot control the hand that they have been dealt. But what they can control is how they play that hand. And if someone had looked at the hand that I was dealt, they would have said it's completely unplayable. And this is a story of how I took that hand and actually turned it into a great success. And there are a lot of pointers that led to where I am today.
Well, let me actually play you a clip from last night's Republican presidential debate and see if you're in line with Rick Santorum on how to play that hand. He's talking about let me get this right. He's talking about, well, this is maybe relevant to your personal story. See what you think.
I didn't believe that poverty was the ultimate disability. I believed that people could work and they could succeed. And we brought people together. I got 70 votes to end a federal entitlement, to end a federal entitlement, which was what Paul Ryan's proposed for Medicaid. He's proposed for food stamps. He's proposed for other welfare programs. We did it.
Ending federal entitlements as a way to help people out of poverty.
I don't agree with that. Of course, there are many, many, many reasons. But what I like to say is if you look at kind of what led to my success from poverty, basically poor, to where I am today, it was what I call kind of the big three. When my mother left home at 15, not able to raise me, as you said, she had me when she was 13, there were kind of three things that kind of bridged the gap: my grandmother, my grandfather, and my uncle. And I learned a lot from each one. First of all, from the grandparents, very hard working, went to work every day, sun up to sundown. Now, they were common laborers, but my grandmother gave me a vision at a very young age. She took me over to the big city, this little town where I was born, Apopka, Florida, 13 miles from Orlando. She would take me over on the weekends. She would show me men sitting behind a desk with white shirts and ties. She said, if you study hard, stay in school, you too can one day sit behind a desk and don't have to work in the field.
So you've come out all the way on the other end as a well-off CEO with black kids raised mostly in an affluent, mostly white context. And you write in your book, my wife and I never want blackness to be an abstraction to our children and want them to always comprehend the full measure of the struggles, challenges, and triumphs African Americans have experienced on these shores. And you say shaping and guiding the socialization of black children used to affluent, mostly white environments calls for extra work that some parents aren't willing to do.
That's correct.
What is that extra
work? We went to great steps because we live in the suburbs, basically all white neighborhood. We wanted to make sure that our children realized that they are black. And we would take them into the inner city. We joined an inner city church to give them an experience of who they are.
You did exactly the opposite of what your elders did with you.
That's correct. That's correct. We had to work at it to let them know that they are indeed African American.
Either way, it shows people that there's more of the world than you think from where you start out as a child.
That's correct.
Part of the book is about your company losing its way for a few years. You likened yourself to New Coke, the classic failure to improve on a solid product. What was your New Coke?
Well, you know, what happened is we had an awful year. Of course, we're in the investment management business. We manage money for large institutions and wealthy individuals. And what happened is we had an
awful... Talk about 2004, 2005.
That's correct. Yeah, 2004, the market was doing fine.
Yeah, the bubble was in full swing.
Yeah, our performance, though, was just awful. So therefore, in 2005, we lost a lot of clients. And we began to react to that pressure from consultants, from clients, for improving performance in the short run. Now, our strength in managing money is a longer-term focus, looking over the next 3 to 5 years, figuring out trends, figuring out fundamentals of companies, and investing accordingly. We got off track. We got off track.
How did so many people in your industry not see housing as a bubble and not realizing the risks in the fancy housing mortgage derivatives?
You know, that's a complex question, and a lot of people didn't. Now, fortunately for us, we were not invested in any housing stocks. We did own some banks and a brokerage firm or two. So we kind of missed that financial crisis in that way.
You write that your goal in your career has been to create wealth for families and philanthropies. Is coupling those two part of your way of giving back?
It certainly is. You know, Brent, I like to use the word giving forward because basically in our philanthropy, which has been quite substantial, we're looking at improving things for the next generation, especially for impoverished communities. And you know, we think that people who have been blessed, as we have been blessed, should be a blessing to someone less fortunate. And we've focused a lot of time and attention. Another reason is when I went to college, I had a lady that I never met. In the book, we talk about Lady B, who basically paid all of my college expenses, books, tuition, room and board to Howard University. And as I think back on that, I said, you know, one day when I have a few nickels to rub together, I want to be helpful to others in similar circumstances, less fortunate.
Great. We have a minute left. Where did you grow up?
Apopka,
Florida. Oh, you said
Florida.
That, Apopka, Florida.
Yes, small town, 2,000 people at the time.
I just want you to elaborate for our last, 45 seconds here on something you wrote in your book. Part of Jim Crow's sickness, and you're 70 years old, so people have a sense of when you grew up. Part of Jim Crow sickness is the institution's peculiar ability to anesthetize and desensitize, making the patently absurd seem perfectly ordinary and unremarkable.
That's true. In growing up, it all seemed normal. That was a way of life. And fortunately, that has changed.
What are we anesthetized from and desensitized to today?
Well, racism is still live and well. It just takes different forms. And people, especially black people, have to be sensitive to various situations and the way they're treated and the way it comes across. So you just have to be alert. There are good people in the world of all colors.
Eddie Brown, maybe you've seen him on PBS many times on Wall Street Week. He is the CEO of Brown Capital Management and now the author of Beating the Odds, Eddie Brown's Investing and Life Strategies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.